We decided to do something a little different in class this morning, since we're going to have so many parents that were with us. We thought that it would be good to spend some time telling you about the local church here, of which your child may be a member, and for us as a congregation to help to review for us who we are and what we're about as God's people. I hope it'll be helpful to you. I hope it'll be helpful to us to spend time doing this morning. We're going to do this in the context of Ephesians chapter 4, and you might turn in your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 4. And let's read some familiar passage. Beginning in verse 11. And he gave some as apostles, and some as prophets, and some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints for the work of service, to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. There are two groups of people in this passage. There are those who are to be equipped, the saints. The work of the church involves, and particularly in talking about a local church, the matter of equipping the saints to accomplish the things that he talks about in this passage. That is, working to perfect them, to teach them to be servants, and to edify or to build them up. That this is what the local church is about. But you have not only those who need to be equipped, you also have the equippers. Those who have the responsibility of working with the local church to equip them to be what God wants them to be. And so this is who he is talking about when he talks about apostles and prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. All of these are, the thing they have in common is they are all teaching roles and involve establishing the congregation in the faith. But they are certainly more than just teaching roles. As they work to equip or to perfect the saints, their aim or goal together is to bring the group to maturity. So they are not tossed about by every wind of doctrine, as he goes on to say, but work together as a body, each part contributing to what happens in the local church. I find it interesting when you look in the New Testament to see the Lord's concern for these early congregations. Outside of the seven churches of Asia and maybe Jerusalem, you don't have much knowledge about local congregations older than, say, 5 or 6 years old. Most of the letters are written to churches that were very young. The first 2 Thessalonian letters are written to a church probably in their first year of existence or maybe less. And you see the great concern from the very beginning to establish them in the faith, to get them rooted. And we see illustrated in that really what a local church's responsibility is to itself. I really think part of the purpose of the spiritual gifts in the beginning, many of the spiritual gifts, was to provide in these young churches the source of knowledge and wisdom and discernment, which were some of the spiritual gifts, to these young groups that did not have many, some, if any, mature Christians to lead them. And so the Spirit of God, by these special spiritual gifts, would enable them to have the knowledge and wisdom and discernment beyond what they would have without the Spirit's guidance. And so they would have those things. And so, as I said, Paul writes 2 letters to the Thessalonian church in the first few months of their existence. In between them, he sends Timothy to them. He's concerned. He's wanting to know how things are going and trying to establish them from the very beginning. We see our role here then as saints that need to be equipped and those who are trying to equip the saints. We are all part of the same body, everybody trying to contribute to the work of the local church. So I wanted to talk a little bit about equipping the saints in the university church and what we're trying to accomplish here in trying to carry this out. And as I say, maybe give you some insight into this church, its history, and its future, and what we are trying to accomplish here. So let's talk about that a little bit. This congregation began in 1961, and this was the original building that was built. We still have it as part of the structure here. It's back behind here, wing right back here. That was the original auditorium with a couple of small classrooms. And this is how it looks today, back there. And so that early group began what I see as a very insightful idea, having some understanding of the growth that would take place here. That University of South Florida was only 4 or 5 years old, I think consisted of 2, maybe 3 buildings. And Bruce B. Downs, north of here, was a gravel road, soon to become a 2-lane road. And what has happened since then is this has been one of the major areas of development, USF, and then north of here into New Tampa. We have tens of thousands of cars that drive by this building every day and gives us great opportunities in evangelism and in other ways. But a new auditorium was built here in 1966 or 67. Many of you may remember what is now to us the old auditorium that has now been divided into classrooms and what it looked like on the inside. That building filled. And let's see, we put some other things in here. Oh, yes, this was then a back classroom wing that was added in the 80s. Another classroom wing was added down the front here, and those classrooms still exist on the back side of this foyer here along there. And then in December of 2006, we began to meet in this auditorium at that time. So there's been about 55 years of work here, going into 56. As I said, most churches you read about in the New Testament are only a few years old. But we try to still look at the pattern of what was being done with them and what the apostles and evangelists in the New Testament trying to do with them, and the pattern that we have in the New Testament to try to carry out the work of the university church. Over the years, at least 14 men have served as elders here, and of course many, many deacons. And it has a history of wanting to develop leadership and to put it in place. That desire to lead, I think, is in the hearts of many of our young men today as they work and develop themselves and are becoming very capable men as deacons and as teachers. We now have 6 elders, 21 deacons, and 3 preachers. Josh Creel is working with us now for about, I think it's 2.5 years. Is that about right? Seems like 10, but... Josh is exceptional. We're thrilled to have Josh with us, and Josh does most of our preaching now. I came to join this work in 1994 and have served as an evangelist since that time and an elder also in the last few years. One of our young men decided that he wanted to become a gospel preacher, and this summer we added him to be a part of the of our work here. Taylor Pickup is now working with us, and Josh and I work along with him and helping him develop and become the gospel preacher that he wants to be. And so we're thrilled that he's here. Taylor is hardly wet behind the ears. He's 32 years old, comes from a godly family and a family of preachers, but that's not why he decided to do this. He decided to do this out of his heart because this is where his heart was. And so we're thrilled to have him as a part of the work here. And the three of us are now working together beginning in July of this year. But the aim of the leadership here is to try to follow the biblical exhortation to equip the saints. This is what our work is. And so it began certainly with instruction in the Word of God as the foundation of equipping the saints. This is what we're trying to do. As with most congregations, we work to develop effective teaching at all levels, beginning with our toddlers all the way through adults. And we're thankful to have well-organized classes with organized curriculum and many, many capable teachers here that help. We have a good group of teens here right now, middle school through high school, who are dedicated to the Lord, very spiritually minded, adding a lot to this congregation. Normally, we will have 3 to 4 adult classes meeting at the building on Sundays and Wednesdays. Our college class begins today and will continue through the school year, through much of the school year. It's all overseen by elders and capable deacons who work diligently in each of these areas, curriculum is planned and executed at all levels, trying to make sure that the whole counsel of God is proclaimed here over time, and we work at that. We are blessed to have many capable adult teachers and want to develop more as they grow here. And as I mentioned, during the school year, we're blessed with a large number of college students, both from USF, Florida College, Hillsborough Community College. Sometimes we'll have a student or two from the University of Tampa. And there are other colleges and specialty schools in the area that in which we have students come and be a part. In recent years, we will have anywhere from 55 to 65 college students here during the school year. We involve our college students in the work here in every way that we can. We encourage them to place membership, and they do that. Most of them will place membership and identify with the work here. And that thrills us to see them do that. I was in school at Florida College in about 68, 69, and 70. And I attended the University Church. It never occurred to me to place membership during that time. I don't think many college students. In fact, I remember a couple of guys placing membership, and I thought, boy, that's weird. It just wasn't in our thinking because I think we were more interested, honestly, you know, visiting churches and finding what girls were there at that early time. So many of our college students are spiritually mature already, wanting to be involved in the work, and we are so thankful for that. And they do become involved. We involve them in teaching classes, both our children's and even teen classes, and some have even helped in co-teaching and mentoring in some of our college age or adult classes. Some have that capability while they're here, and we involve them in that. And we do try to measure both their willingness and their ability to do this and use them accordingly, and have done that with great success. We also have our college students meeting groups throughout the year. We begin the year with a large college group, but we will divide them into smaller groups that different families in the congregation will take responsibility for and meet with them throughout the school year. And this has helped us to get to know them better. It's hard for every member to get to know 65 students, but if we can break them down into smaller groups and be involved with that, then it helps us to do that, to get to know some of them and to help them have a relationship with the local congregation. We have other groups that meet through the year. This year we've had task-specific groups that we've divided the congregation into. And we encourage our college students to get involved in those also. They usually meet once a month, and many of them have done that also to get involved in those things. And we will have other small group studies for specific ages through the year and for other needs that take place throughout the year. Instruction is key to who we are and what we're trying to do during this time. And so we plan and try to carry out instruction for Christians at every age, at every level of maturity, and we work at that. It's far from perfect, but that is our aim and our goal. And our elders spend a lot of time talking about working toward the spiritual maturity of the congregation in these areas. We certainly are interested in evangelistic outreach in many different ways. Spreading the gospel throughout the whole world is important to us and is a part of our work. Just in the past year or so, we've had fellowship and works in South Africa, in the Czech Republic, and in Costa Rica. We had a very personal reason to become involved in the Costa Rican work, that one of our members is from there and was very interested in trying to evangelize his family. And as a result of that, we've been involved in that. And Kenny Moore, who of course worked with me for so many years here, is now doing much there. And our own Jenny, his daughter, has been down there just recently to that work. And we're very interested in what is happening there. We've been involved in an ongoing basis with works in Liberia, in Ethiopia, the Seychelles, and in Scotland. Bob Owen has gone to Scotland and Ethiopia on an annual basis since 1998. I began accompanying him in 2002. I leave this afternoon for a month. I will be in first in Ethiopia for 2 weeks, and then in the Seychelles for 2 weeks. And we have been involved with these works, obviously, on an ongoing basis for a long time. And the congregation has played a major role in my support in going over there. And it, I think, manifests this congregation's commitment to world evangelism and having fellowship in these works. It's been thrilling to be a part of the work in Ethiopia and seeing the growth that has taken there beyond anything I've experienced in my lifetime. Of the growth that has taken place and the changes, the transformation of the church there to follow the biblical pattern, all the things that have happened. Bob, as I said, has made several trips to Scotland also, in an area where the gospel struggles, and he's been a great encouragement to brethren there. Many of you may be familiar with Jimmy Petrus and Tabitha, who were in the Seychelles. Jimmy was here in this country for a while. He is a native Seychellois, as they say. And he and Tabitha have been there for several years there and are doing a wonderful work. The Seychelles are off the east coast of Africa, 1,000 miles out in the Indian Ocean. They're very isolated. But the work there is a wonderful work and a strong work. And being isolated, they are thrilled to death that anyone will take time to come and spend time with them. And so it's a great blessing and encouragement to me when I'm able to make that hop, about a 4-hour flight from Addis Ababa over to the Seychelles and spend time with the brethren there and encourage them. I ask you to be praying for me over the next month and for the success of the work during the time that we are there. World evangelism is something that a congregation can do in different ways. Sometimes you support a man, a single man directly. We do that with Samson Walker in Liberia, a man who has tried to preach the gospel in a war-torn country. And during the time that he has been there, he has been attacked twice, beaten, his car stolen. He's had to flee the country for weeks at a time because of fighting and return to go back in and to work with the brethren there. He is an amazing man from that standpoint. And those brethren there at this moment are working to build their own building. So being in places like that and having a relationship with places like that changes your perspective about what this is all about. It certainly has changed my perspective to spend time in a third world country with Christians and to see the dedication and the faithfulness of them under the most trying of conditions. They want to go to heaven. And they are committed to that and working from that standpoint. Pray for all these brethren, if you will. Local evangelism is something that we've had success with over the years. Most people look at Tampa and say, you know, all these churches of Christ down there, what could you do evangelistically? The truth is, it is one of the whitest fields for harvest that I've ever been a part of. And as I say, we're in a community that where the door is open in so many different ways. We've had the opportunity to convert a lot of people over the years as a result of that. We continue to make efforts, concerted efforts, to convert the lost here. And God has blessed those efforts. And we want our young men and women, as they come in to be a part of the congregation, to be involved in these works, and to teach them the importance of evangelizing friends and contacts and be a part of that. I'm thankful for the opportunities we've had in Tampa. Just to give you a little background about Tampa, I joked with them after I moved down here that when I moved from Birmingham to Tampa, I moved north. This is not part of the Old South. This is a multicultural place made up of people from not only just over, all over the United States, but from all over the world. And that gives you so many opportunities and open doors. In a urban environment, you have so many more people that are disconnected religiously, who face problems. The loneliest people you will find will not be in small towns. It will be in big cities. They will live in apartment complexes around thousands of people and know absolutely no one else around them. And in those kind of environments and situations, you find doors that open and opportunities to teach. Our location produces walk-in visitors almost every Sunday and opportunities to teach there. This is a harvest field and an opportunity to teach here. In fact, that's one of the main reasons I moved here. The first Sunday I came, I asked to see their visitors' cards. And somebody gave me a stack of cards about this thick that they had had over the last year. And I began to realize the opportunities that were here. So local evangelism is something that is very much a part of us in what we're trying to accomplish here in the local work. By the way, if you have questions about anything about this, I'm going to have a little Q&A at the end here and give you an opportunity. So if something occurs to you, be sure and ask that. Well, certainly another part of the work of the church, of which we strive to accomplish, is a benevolent spirit, the attitude of being benevolent as God's people. I think that truly exists here. I think maybe, as I've already referred to and you may have already observed, this church is very much a multicultural group with people from all levels of the social and economic spectrum here. And it's given us an opportunity to help members in need many times and to do so willingly and happily. I think the history of the church in this country, because of past struggles, many times have caused churches to draw back in their thinking about the benevolent work of a local church. Don't misunderstand me. The New Testament teaches that the responsibility of the local church as a congregation is to its members. But it's clear that it teaches us that we have an attitude and a responsibility as individual Christians to reach out to those less fortunate and to show compassion to all those that are around us. Benevolence is really just as much a part of the local work as is evangelism or edification. We sometimes make it the red-headed stepchild, I think, that evangelism, edification, benevolence, well, I don't know. Let's see. Let's see what we need to do there. But if you look at the New Testament church, go back and read Acts 1 through 6 and see what role benevolence played in that work in the local church. Read Paul's instructions about giving that we often quote from and teach from. And every one of those collections that he's talking about there were collections, benevolent collections for the saints, all of them. We need to have that benevolent spirit. We need to manifest that. It's as much, as I say, a part of the work of the local church as the other things, and have that in our heart and mind. I think this church has developed that attitude, that we work to that end. And beyond that, we try to have a benevolent spirit in the community as individuals being involved in things. There are members here who on an ongoing basis regularly feed homeless in our area, trying to reach out to them. Members here have even made provision on an individual basis to see that visitors to our services who come in with needs are talked to and helped as we see opportunity and need there. And those things can and do open doors in different ways. But I truly believe a benevolent spirit exists among this church family. There is an attitude there of wanting to help. A combination of that, I think, is manifested in something that happened here recently. That's not benevolence as such, but it manifests the kind of spirit. A couple of Wednesday nights, I'd gotten word from the Seychelles. They were really in need of Bibles. They use Bibles in evangelism. And I mentioned that to the congregation here, and I just said, I'm going to try to ship some Bibles over there if I can raise some money. I told them what I could ship for about a little over $400. And if any of you wanted to help with that, let me know. By the time I left the building that night, I already had $755. And by the following Sunday, I had over 1,000. So I joke with the people here, they'll get those Bibles, and I'll hit Halt back a couple of times before I go. And But what it's enabled me to do is to meet another need. And many of them handed the money and said, if you get more than you need, use it however you can. And that is, there's always a need for Bibles in Ethiopia also. And so the rest of the money will be going toward helping supply Bibles in Ethiopia in their home language, which is Amharic. And they use those evangelistically also. But it's the attitude of this group, ready to give, ready to help in whatever way that they can, that just impressed me so much. And that was beyond what the local church does here in providing a major part of my support in going on this trip whenever I go. So a benevolent spirit we see is essential to what the local church does and to be involved in it directly. But I also believe this church does show the same care for one another. There is a loving and a caring spirit in this group. There is this desire, I believe, to reach out to one another. It's not done perfectly, but certainly there is that attitude here. Visitors to our service, the comment we get most often from them is about the friendliness of the group. And it's a friendly interest, I assure you, is genuine. And the response has helped so much in reaching out to people. I really think there are a lot of members here who would testify to the caring spirit of this congregation in their time of trial and need. Also, those who have been converted, who were impressed from the very beginning with the attitude of this church. The powerful love of God has had great effect here. And we give Him the glory for that, for the transformation He's brought about in the lives of so many. The Word is powerful. The providential hand of God, I've seen many times, I believe, at work in this church and the work that has gone on and the opportunities that it presents us. As we try to work in all these areas of edification, evangelism, benevolence, and also changing our own lives on a daily basis, transforming it to be in the likeness of Christ. So many are committed to that. It's exciting to see the young couples that we have here that are so committed to the Lord's work, growing and developing. And it's one of the reasons we have so many deacons, and there are more that will become deacons soon. We just, that quality of young people that we have here that has such a great effect. We are thrilled about that. But having said all that, I'll say this. We are an imperfect church. I think if Paul were to write to us, I'm sure there would be things he would address that need to be corrected and done better. We are just sinners saved by God's grace. That's all we are. And we have no place to be prideful. There are times where we have failed people. There are times where we missed opportunities. There are times where we've had to struggle with our own internal differences. But thankfully, God has continued to be a part of this work. And we're thankful for God for the good that has been accomplished. God has accomplished a lot of good work at this place through the years. But it's a recognition on our part that there is so much more to do. So much more that needs to be accomplished here. And we want any and all who want to be a part of this church to become faithful and active servants. If you as parents are interested in your child being a part of a work that's working, I urge you to examine local congregations. University, of course, is not the only one. There are other good congregations in this town. And urge them to be a part of a work where they will be included and they will be given the opportunity to grow. And there are congregations here who are committed to that. We want to see them continue to grow. For most of them, it's their first opportunity to be out on their own, to make their own decisions. And I joked with some of the ones returning this morning. I said, well, glad to see you. I thought you'd sleep in the first Sunday. I wasn't sure. No, they don't. They are here. And we are so thankful for them. But any time we can be of help and with your children while they're here, and edification, and reaching out to them in any way, please give us the opportunity to do that and to try to accomplish that. Well, that kind of gives you a review of who we are and what we're about. I'm sure it's not that different from many of the congregations of which you are a part, because there's so many good groups of people across this country. But we wanted you to have some insight into who we are and what we're about this morning. Let me give you a chance to ask questions. If you have any, we'll get Bob Owen to answer them for us. Any questions or thoughts? Any stump the preacher questions, Bible questions? Yes. We don't do canvas the community type things. It's just not effective around here to do that. And there are different reasons why we don't do it. But we do encourage the college students to become a part of our evangelistic efforts directly. We have some of ours that meet on the USF campus over here. There's a group called Sowers Club. Some of our members, our college students particularly, are involved in carrying that on, where they have ongoing Bible studies and make evangelistic efforts on that campus. You see, it's kind of a different situation here for students. Florida College students come here and they get this constant spiritual feeding on campus. Our other students do not. The church is really their spiritual lifeline. And that's true of our USF students. And I encourage our Florida College students to become involved with their USF students. It's a shame that there's almost a dichotomy between them, because each group knows their own group and we try to get them to work together. And we've tried to encourage our Florida College students to become involved in the Sowers Club and the things that they're doing on the campus at USF, because that's a real evangelistic area to do that. And we do invite them to get involved in reaching out to our walk-in visitors and making contacts with those in the community. We do work with that. Bob? Okay, well, it meets on Thursday nights, and at the first of the year, they have like a general day, or is it a couple of days? Huh? That's it. Let me repeat that, because everybody couldn't hear you. But they have at the start of the school at USF what's called the Bull Market. Now, the USF Bulls, that's why it's called that. But, they all set up booths, clubs, and everyone set up booths. The Source Club sets up a booth, and they talk about what they're going to be doing. They hand out Bibles. We're buying Bibles for them to use this fall, and then they allow them on the campus to advertise meetings by writing in chalk on sidewalks. And so they'll go out and chalk up the sidewalks about meeting time and the club and all that. And we'll meet regularly in the student center over there in doing that. And they make other efforts like that. Yes? The group has what they call partner studies, where everyone in the group has a partner that they study with on an ongoing basis to build relationships and knowledge with each other, too. So those are ongoing things. And you see, you have to think about USF in a different mindset from Florida College, because, you know, they're getting Bible classes every day, all the teachers are Christians and all of that. There's a real spiritual need in USF that a lot of our Florida College kids could be a tremendous help to if they become involved in that. Bob? Okay. E-Teams is something that we've had through the years. And when I get back from Ethiopia, we're going to be rebuilding that. But our E-Teams have been efforts we've made to have groups that specifically concentrate on all contacts and visitors that we have. Meet on a weekly basis, and we go through all our visitors and contacts. Everybody takes responsibilities about who we're going to meet and follow up on, and try to get to know these people. In an urban environment, they have to trust you before they'll talk to you. And that means you have to make contacts and reach out to them in ways that they see that you are genuine and of interest. It used to be that if someone visited at services on Sunday morning, I could be in their house on Sunday night. I mean, on Monday night. You can't do that anymore, and it doesn't happen here. They have to visit services 3-4 times before they trust you enough to sit down and talk to you. That's usually true. We make the follow-up and contacts, but it's just an urban environment's a mistrusting environment, and they have to get to know you. And so that's part of what our effort is in the beginning. And I'm sure some of you also experience that in urban settings and environments. But we try to make that effort to let them see we're genuine, that we're interested, and it opens the door then to begin to teach them. Any other questions? Okay. Well, you're in for good luck today. I'm not preaching this morning. Josh is preaching. As I say, Josh does most of our preaching, just about all of our Sunday morning preaching, and does a wonderful job. Josh has been a real blessing to us since he's been here, and he and Taylor are wonderful co-workers, and look forward to our continued work together. All right, anything else? Huh? Okay, was that first bell or second bell? First, okay. All right, well, we'll end class, and we'll have a second bell here that ends class, and then we'll have a break until 9:50.